Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. According to conventional prejudices, male infertility and masculinity do not go together. Men don't like to talk about infertility, but it's out there, and the denial of our society about male infertility is holding back medical research in the area. If you experience male infertility, if you have some insight, we'd love to hear from you. Give us your story. Call in at 210-614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. Our guest this half hour is Liberty Barnes. She is a medical sociologist, and she's written the new book, Conceiving Masculinity, Male Infertility, Medicine, and Identity. Liberty, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
So, Liberty, why is this such a touchy subject? Why do people, particularly men, they don't want to talk about this?
Well, maybe I'll just start by stating the obvious. It deals with some very private parts of our bodies, and we're sensitive about our bodies, and we are very sensitive about those parts of our body that so much of our gender is attributed to.
But is this a really primal response?
To be embarrassed?
Yeah.
Or not embarrassed, or not say,
it's private, I don't want to talk about it, or I don't even want to admit it, or I won't even admit it to myself.
So one thing that I write about in the book is that right from the start of the project, it became very clear to me that a lot of men did not self-identify as infertile, even though they had very low sperm counts or zero sperm counts. And I would talk to psychologists. I'm a sociologist, and I talked to some psychologists about this, and their take on it was, this is deep-seated denial. These men are really struggling. If they confess to themselves that they're infertile, they'll be so devastated it will crush them. And as a sociologist, we don't study, our object of study is not the human psyche. We like to take about five big steps back and look at the bigger picture. And so in the study, I started to notice that there were different things going on at different levels, that there were the patients who were not self-identifying as infertile. But then there were the families who were helping to protect these men. And then there was the medical system that was doing its best not to use words that would, you know, harm these men's sense of masculinity. And they were avoiding words like infertility. And then I'm looking at the big, larger culture and realizing that infertility is sort of a taboo. And so there's really an entire system in place that is actually allowing these men to not self-identify as infertile.
And you also write that because we don't want to hurt men's feelings by dealing with directly with their infertility, that we push the medical treatment onto the woman in the relationship.
You know, this is an interesting debate within the medical field right now, because really probably the best treatments we have are with in vitro fertilization and ICSI. But one of the arguments that I make in the book is that we've actually inherited a long legacy of putting all the focus on women's bodies. And so now, of course, that's the top-of-the-line treatment we have. We've done most of our work, most of our research, put most of our effort, most of our focus on women's bodies. And so now when a man comes in and he has male infertility, the doctor can just say, don't worry about this, we're just going to treat your wife. And right now, the technology is so sophisticated, in fact, that it only takes one sperm cell to use IVF with intracytoplasmic sperm injection and help a couple conceive.
But why not treat the man, help him?
This is a great question. This is a great question. And this is something that I found was becoming very debatable between urologists who specialize in the treatment of male infertility and reproductive endocrinologists who are board-certified gynecologists that treat female infertility. And so these two medical specialties are sort of vying for control over the male body. Some urologists are saying, hey, wait, we don't need to go to IVF yet. I can treat this man. I can do a surgery. I can try some hormone therapy. I think there's something I can do. And then there are other doctors who are saying, that's too complicated. Let's just go straight to IVF. And what's sort of happening in the process is that these patients are kind of falling out of the picture, that the debate is not visible to the patients. The patients don't know what all of their options are, and so they're not always getting to pick the treatment that they want first.
So what about this clomiphene citrate?
Oh, the clomiphene citrate that I write about in the book. So clomiphene citrate is known by its brand name as Clomid, and it's actually a very common treatment for women who are struggling with infertility. In fact, I went through some infertility treatments probably 10 or so years ago, and I was given Clomid.
And you have a beautiful little boy to show for it.
Yes, I have some beautiful children. So one of the doctors, I interviewed one doctor who has, he's kind of nearing retirement now. He's been in the business for a long time, and he started trying to treat male infertility back in the 1970s. And one thing he told me was that he called the makers of clomiphene citrate, and he said, you know, I think I could get this to work in men. I think that it would stimulate the right hormone relay in men that would increase sperm production. And the company said, you know, we've already made plans to, you know, market this drug toward women. I mean, it's important to keep in mind at that time there wasn't really direct-to-consumer marketing, but they were planning to tell the medical community this is a drug for women. They'd already made that sort of marketing decision. And so the clinical drug trials were never run. Well, now clomiphene citrate is available in so many generic brands that no one wants to run the clinical trials on men, and because there's considered no way to recoup the funds that it would cost to run the clinical trials. And so now if you give it to men, it's considered an off-label use, which some male infertility specialists do use clomiphene citrate. But, you know, we live in a very litigious society when it comes to medicine, and a lot of doctors will try to protect themselves and aren't going to use a drug that would be off-label. And the other thing is there's some concern. Like, we've really perfected its use in women now. We know what dosages to start with. And with men, it's still kind of a shot in the dark. We're not exactly sure which kinds of male infertility it treats best and what dosages we should use. So some doctors will say, well, there's no sense using clomiphene citrate. As a sociologist, I say, let's just step back and think for a second. You know, maybe we just haven't quite imagined it yet, what this could do and what this would look like.
Or maybe we haven't opened ourselves up to that thinking that we should be treating men, or men should have to deal with the responsibility of this part of conceiving, that, you know, it's not all on the woman.
Exactly. And, you know, something that was so fascinating to me in the research is that there's a very strong sense among medical doctors and epidemiologists and public health specialists that men are lazy and they don't want to take care of themselves, and they find it very emasculating to be told to take care of themselves, especially when it comes to medicine or, you know, personal health. And yet, what I found was men saying, I wish there was a drug I could take. I wish there was a surgery I could do. I wish there was something I could do. This is, you know, too painful to watch my wife go through this. And every time a man was given an option of doing any kind of male-focused treatment, he would pick that one first. The couple would choose that one first. And I guess I thought, you know, we need to get this message back to the medical community.
Right, we need to have a national discussion. We need to take this out of the shadows and start talking about it in the open. Liberty, we're going to take a quick break. We also want to open the phones. If you got a question or comment, give us a call, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies, speaking with Liberty Barnes. She is a research associate at the Department of Sociology at the University of Cambridge in Conceiving Masculinity. Liberty takes a look at the world of male infertility. She puts it under the microscope to examine how culturally pervasive notions of gender shape our understanding of disease and how disease impacts our personal ideas about gender. So, Liberty, let me ask you, this is a crude expression that you hear a lot. When a man says he is infertile, or people talk about his infertility, he says he's shooting blanks. What is the significance of that expression? What does it mean?
Well, okay. As I write in the book, when we say someone's shooting blanks, it's supposed to be drawing on an analogy of a man with a gun, and he's shooting the gun, and he's aiming it toward the target, and he's ineffective, and his equipment is ineffective. He just can't get the work done. And this is very revealing about how...
Right, because there's nothing more powerful than for a man to can have than a gun. And
right,
so to be shooting blanks is basically you don't have that power. You don't have that masculine power.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, there's other phrases that we use like, oh, grow a pair, or that takes balls. And, I mean, really, does it take balls? No. I mean, we hear people say this to women who don't have balls and don't need balls. But we do have this very strong idea that testicles and sperm are very potent, very powerful, and that they are a symbol of someone's power.
And as we talked about before the break, you know, being locked into this method of thinking is keeping progress from happening, from actually developing effective and safe medical treatments for men who are dealing with infertility.
Yes, and it's also making it very difficult for men to even know where to go. That when a man finds out he has a low sperm count, some medical systems don't even have a specialist to refer him to. And that's very frustrating for men and for their, you know, their female partners.
The phone lines are open. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. We'd love to hear from you if you got a story to tell us about male infertility and how it has shaped your identity and your life and how you've dealt with it. Share your story. You might help some other folks out there. The number is 614-8980. So men versus women, what's the biggest population? I mean, who's more infertile, or how does that work?
Okay, so most of the studies that have come out now, everyone is confirming that male and female infertility are equally prevalent. In other words, you know, half of the cases are male and half of the cases are female, and then you've got some cases that are both and some cases that are just unexplained. But generally, it's safe to say male and female infertility are equally common. Now, I did ran some rough numbers and found that in the United States, there are about 5 female infertility specialists for every 1 male infertility specialist. So it could be very difficult for a man to, you know, find a specialist who he could talk to and find out what his options are.
I did see about 5 interesting blogs about men dealing with their infertility online. It's not totally shut out. There is no, you know, like there, you could find people who are taking on these issues and you want to share, but it's not really hitting the mainstream.
No, it's not, especially not in the same way that I think female infertility has. I think women can very quickly find online communities and even, you know, local communities within their own geographic region. And I've also always sensed that women have a strong sense of a group identity, infertile women do, that they kind of see themselves as having a certain shared sisterhood, whereas I think men really go this road alone, that many of the men I talked to said, I'm just so glad you're doing this study because I'm just glad to know I'm not the only person who's dealing with this. I thought I was the only man in the world who was infertile. So...
All right, let's get to the phones. Number is 614-8980, and Hudson has called in. Hudson, welcome to The Source. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm a 34-year-old male. 2 years ago, I had a daughter through IVF. I guess my comment really is related to the fact that I feel I was helped greatly in regards to my infertility. I have CBAVD, congenital bilateral absence of Von Willebrand. And I was able to have a procedure called the MESA, microendoscopic sperm aspiration, to get what sperm I do create but couldn't shoot because of the absence of the Von Willebrand, to ultimately create a beautiful little girl.
Well, congratulations on that.
The medical side of it, I think, does potentially help men, maybe just not necessarily in the same exact way that it's helping the women in fertility.
Well, Hudson, thanks for calling in. Thanks for sharing your story. We sure do appreciate that. I'm sure you're inspiring people who are out there.
Yeah, thank you very much, and congratulations. I think Hudson is bringing up a really important and exciting aspect of male infertility medicine, which is that, like I mentioned, in the intracytoplasmic sperm injection, they only need one sperm. And after that advent was kind of invented, researchers discovered that they could actually do the same procedure using a not fully matured sperm cell taken from the testicles. So like the procedure that Hudson went through, he probably saw a specialist who, you know, like he said, he went through a MESA procedure. They removed that sperm cells from his testicles or his epididymis and were able to use them in IVF. And, you know, that was completely unheard of 20 years ago. That's just very exciting for people. And it really has helped to raise the profile of these doctors who are specializing in male infertility because they are specializing in these kinds of surgeries for men.
Is insurance covering these types of procedures?
You know, this is a tough one. I would say that the patients that I interviewed really had no idea going into it what was going to be covered and what wasn't. And male infertility specialists told me that if you try to code something just as infertility and your health insurance coverage, I mean, there are some states where insurance providers are required to cover infertility costs, but that's only a few states. Most states it's not covered. But male infertility specialists said if they could code treatments as, you know, trying to treat pain or trying to treat discomfort or trying to treat something that was preventing them from, you know, functioning properly or working properly, rather than coding it as infertility per se, they could get these treatments covered. So, you know, you could argue that sometimes it's easier to get male infertility treatments covered than female infertility treatments.
All right.
If you don't have, you know, exactly infertility coverage.
Back to the phones. The number is 614-8980 if you want to join the conversation like Camden has. Camden, welcome to The Source. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want to make a comment for any other guys out there. I'm 30 years old, and a few years ago went to my primary care physician for initial complaint of depression. I just felt terrible all the time. It turned out I had low testosterone. I was not infertile, but I had the testosterone of about a 90-year-old. And it was like, I mean, it was devastating to find that out. Cause testosterone is, you know, manliness, is manhood. And I went to a urologist and got started on Clomid, and it worked fantastic. My numbers are back up. I feel great. I still didn't want to mention it to anybody until one time I mentioned it to my father-in-law, who happens to be a former Navy SEAL. And it turns out he's got low testosterone. And all of a sudden it's kind of like, hey, you know, if he's okay with it, you know, he's, you know, what's more manly than being a Navy SEAL? So,
all right.
Just encouragement for guys. If you're worried about it, don't worry. There's tons of guys out there with it. We may not talk about it, but, you know, talk about it with your doctor at least.
All right, Camden, thanks for those comments. Of course, low testosterone and what you're talking about, Liberty, are two different things. And there is some concerns about the overprescription of low testosterone and its link to heart disease.
Well, you know, Camden made an interesting comment because he said that he was prescribed Clomid, which means that he wasn't prescribed testosterone, you know, per se. And that means that was a very wise doctor he talked to, because there are some cases where men go in and they're given testosterone, and, you know, this seems counterintuitive, but testosterone will actually kill your sperm production.
Right, because your body feels like we've got all this testosterone in your system right now, you'll stop producing your own.
Right. And in fact, there was one patient in the study who had a brain tumor, and so his testosterone was really low, and his doctor prescribed him testosterone, and it just killed all of his sperm production when he and his wife wanted to go and have another child. And so it was very hard for them to get this, you know, this prescription just right so that he could have testosterone high enough to have an erection but still be able to have enough sperm to conceive.
But the weird thing is, you know, how many years ago no one would have talked about low T, low testosterone out in the public or whatever, talking among friends. Now, due to marketing, that has become out in the open and people are willing to talk about that. Wouldn't it be great if we're able to talk about the experience of male infertility, try to wipe away some of the negative implications of it, and people can actually just deal with it as just as another condition that can be rectified by medicine?
You know, that would be so helpful. And it's very strange to me. This is the big puzzle to me, is why is it that we can talk so openly now about Viagra, but we still have a hard time addressing male infertility And I'm not really sure why that is. I think sometimes it just takes a certain amount of push, a certain, you know, kind of tipping point, reach a certain tipping point where we can start discussing these things more openly.
All right. Well, we're talking about them now, and I want to thank you, Liberty Barnes, for coming on the air and helping us talk about the medical issues, the sociological issues about talking about male infertility and identity. And your new book is out there. It's called
Conceiving Masculinity.
Conceiving Masculinity. Thank you so much. I was looking for my notes. Anyway, Liberty, thank you for coming on The Source. We appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
And this is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you so much for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.